Grant Napier on Radio Row, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered, and I've gotten to know Kirk Morrison over the years when he started with the Raiders, and he's joining me now, and here he is doing some broadcast work and great stuff going on. Kirk, it's good to talk to you, buddy.
Great to talk to you. I know I'm sort of a relief. You don't have to talk about DeMarcus Cousins for about 10 minutes. Right?
So you got it.
Good. You got,
hey, man,
you're like, to talk about DeMarcus and Matt Barnes.
Yeah.
And all the guys, so we're good for a little bit.
You know what?
I give you a little break.
Thank you for understanding my life.
I do. I get it. Trust me.
You get it. I appreciate it. God, you know, for someone that played with the Raiders and the tradition of the Raiders, to see what's going on now, they finally have become good again, and then the Vegas, that looks like it's falling apart. I'm just curious, from a guy that was part of the franchise, how you see things right now.
Well, I see it not necessarily as a guy, a part of the franchise. I'll go fan first. So when the Raiders moved back to Oakland from Los Angeles, my dad got season tickets. So we're more invested in this thing than just me as a former player. As a former player, you know, is it my say? I was a fan first.
It's the fabric of your family from a sports sense.
I was sitting in 325, section 325 back in 95. Okay, Grant? So I'm sitting there watching this and being a part of this and the love that I have for the organization, because I was there in the bad days too. Mm. You get what I mean? I was there in the Mike White days.
Oh, boy.
Bugles and all. I mean, like, I go back. So the one thing, when they came back to Oakland, remember, they built Mount Davis.
Yep.
And that was supposed to kind of be the Band-Aid to put over, you know, the old Oakland, Alameda County kind of Coliseum. And hopefully that would get you into the new generation, you know, when it gets you to the 2000s, you know, the new era. That's not going to work. They should have built the stadium a long time ago. And you're seeing now that teams are saying, we can't do it anymore. And I live in Los Angeles, and I cover the Rams now, you know, and I'm on, you know, the Rams radio network. So I know what these teams are going through. The guys, when they came over last year from the Rams, from St. Louis to L.A., is like, it's exhausting. That's all everybody wanted to talk about, and we couldn't focus on our job. I think that's the same thing in Oakland. With so much going on, I really actually applaud Jack Del Rio and Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. I applaud those guys, Grant, because they have to deal with that question every day. Anytime a new report comes out, hey, did you hear about Vegas? Hey, what do you guys think about what's going on? Like, they just want to play football, and I think we all want to just see a resolution.
Yeah.
If they're going to move, go ahead and move, okay? So we can move on with it. If you're going to stay, let's go ahead and stay. But with this, you know, this tippy-toeing around, back and forth, you know.
You know what bothers me? Yeah. And I'm not, I'm from the East Coast. I'm a New York Giants fan. But I got to tell you something. I talk with Raider fans every day. A lot of my close personal friends are Raider fans.
Right.
Last year, the Raiders played in Mexico City.
Yes.
On a Monday night, it was their home game in Houston.
I remember.
All right? And I'm like, okay, all right. I don't like that, but I understood it. So what happens? The Raiders now are going to Mexico City again.
Yes.
To play the New England Patriots on Monday night.
Yes.
Instead of the Raider fans having a chance to go see their team at the Coliseum on Monday night. And you know what? That really bothers me, because I know that Mark Davis has endorsed this. All right? Mark Davis is the one that campaigned to have the Raiders go down to Mexico City. I understand it for 1 year, but the Raiders, as you well know, and we just talked about this, they have not been relevant since 2002 until last year.
Right.
And now you're going to have another Monday night game, and you're telling your fans that have supported you through thick and thin, oh, we're going to go play that game down in Mexico City. And it's nothing against Mexico.
Right.
Hey, I did a game in Mexico City last year with the NBA.
Right.
But we're playing 82 games a year. I get that. It really bothers me that, once again, the Raiders get a Monday night home game, and it's going to be played in Mexico City.
Yeah. And, look, it goes two ways, because I get where you're coming from. But then when I get that bill in the mail, because I pay for my dad's season tickets – every year.
Uh-huh.
So you take that one game away, and actually the season tickets are cheaper now for the fan. Now you get one less game, so it's now seven games, so it's cheaper. So now people can say, we can pay for season tickets for seven games rather than that eighth game. So I saw that side of it. But like you mentioned, for that Monday night showcase, you know, will they make it up? So I think probably what they'll do is make it up on a Thursday night game, maybe give them a Thursday home game, where they can get the national scene and you can see how it is. But remember, they gave them the home game this year versus Denver on that Sunday night.
That's
right. So it goes back and forth, and I understand where you're coming.
I don't like it.
They do have to put them on the national
a little bit. Yeah, I don't like it. I got to tell you, I've had a lot of Raid fans call my show, and they agree with me on this.
Yeah, yeah. you're never going to like it, but I always say follow the money train, right?
Yeah,
follow the money, and you know, Mark's going to get a full gate. I mean, you're talking about almost, what, 100,000 people?
Yeah, no, they pack them down there.
So that's two home Raider games.
Yeah.
Think about it. He's getting, because the Coliseum, they get, what, 50,000?
Well, Houston's getting a cut of that money, too.
Right.
I mean, last year Houston got a cut of that.
New England will get a little cut, but you're still making out better than you would if that game was back at home. You get what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I want to ask you, I covered the Raiders. I did the games on TV during the preseason when John Gruden was the coach.
Yes.
And John was the youngest coach in the NFL then.
Yeah.
And you know what? It wasn't an issue with the Raiders because they respected him. And they from early on, they're like, well, this guy knows what he's doing. And so now you cover the Rams. You talk about Sean McVay, who just turned 31.
Love Sean.
Okay.
Love Sean.
All right, so as a player, I want to put you in that locker room. I want to put you as a 25-year-old linebacker.
Right.
And you have a 31-year-old head coach. How important is that first meeting with the team going to be? Because can't you tell within 5 minutes when you hear your coach whether, you know? So tell me, is that going to – I haven't heard a bad word about Sean McVay.
Right.
You love him. But is that an issue in any way, shape, or form, the fact that he's 31?
Yeah, because give him an extra year, 32. Because now you're going back to 2007, my third year in the NFL, 25 years old. And who was the head coach? Lane Kiffin.
Lane Kiffin, that's right.
So I saw it. So I lived it. I know what it is to – a younger head coach to come in. But, see, this is where it's different. Lane Kiffin came into an Oakland environment that had guys who had already been established in the league, who had already won Super Bowls or had been to a Super Bowl, and future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
It's hard to capture a room when Warren Sapp sitting next to me said, I've played more football than you've done. I've watched you almost change, get your diaper changed, basically, because I was under your dad. I was coached by your dad.
Yeah, Monty.
So what are you going to tell me about – so it's a different dynamic, I think, with the Rams. They've always been traditionally the youngest team in the NFL the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
Sean McVay comes in a situation as a guy who's about relationships. That's what he's about, relationships. He's had to deal with RG3 and Kirk Cousins and Colt McCoy. He had a massage over it. And then Jordan Reed, Deshaun Jackson. I mean, he's dealt with some – guys who've we call them some
– he's done it.
Yeah, some personalities.
Right.
In there. I just know that he's going to come in and really bring a different style of coaching that guys understand, and they get used to that.
We're talking with Kirk Morrison. If I told you you had a crystal ball and you could see 2 years into the future, would you see Jared Goff as a good NFL quarterback or as a bust?
I would say good quarterback. You got to put pieces around him.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams didn't do that last year.
No.
They didn't do it. Their offensive line regressed. They were bad. One of the worst in the National Football League. Their running back, one of the worst in the National Football League. Todd Gurley was a bust last year. Let's just
be honest. I can't understand.
You can't understand. But
I know.
Goes back to the offensive line.
Yep.
Goes back to a first-year offensive coordinator and Rob Boris. Chris Winkie was a quarterback coach. He never really was in that situation. So you're trying. They didn't put the support system around him. And when you got a bunch of guys who don't know how to win, I had that question from the beginning of the year, Grant. How do you win? They didn't know how. I look at the Raiders a year ago. You know what? They knew how to win. You know what I mean? Because you know why? They learned how to lose the year prior. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Think about people forget
it's
2 years ago,
it's
the Raiders
point.
Were 3-13.
That's right. It's a great point.
They're like, man, how do we lose in these games? So you go through those tough patches. And Jack said, look, we're going to go through a rough, but let's understand the process. So they learned how to win, right? And guess what happened this year? They didn't go in saying, oh, here we go. They went in expecting to win. When you expect to win, Grant, that's a totally different mindset. You know from the NBA.
Oh, yeah. No, hey, I know.
Certain teams in. When you watch the Warriors play, they expect to win.
We only got – I know you
got
to get out of here. So
no, you got time.
But I want to ask you this because you were always so media-friendly when you played. Did you know – and because I don't think I ever asked you this. Did you know when you were playing that this broadcasting would be something that you wanted to get into and would get into?
Yeah, so my sophomore year of college, I was lucky enough. I was a freshman All-American at San Diego State. My sophomore year, I had a lot of, campaigns and pushes for me. And so my sophomore year, I'm first-team all-conference linebacker, a third-team All-American.
Mm-hmm.
And – next thing you know, they want to really push it a little bit. So I really started to get into the media a little bit more and, being a face of the program, being in front of the camera every day, and it was just comfortable. And I loved that. And I was, getting my degree in criminal justice, and I'm like, dude, I really want to switch over to communications. I was too far into my major, Grant, and I couldn't change. So I stuck with criminal justice, but I did start to intern. and I was a color analyst for the first time as a senior in college. I started calling high school games, so I knew what I wanted to do.
That's awesome.
And after that, when I got to the NFL, I just said I wanted to intern, and I started interning. And then, as your producer Jay will tell you, I got in at Fox when I was in my fifth year in the National Football League.
That's awesome.
And I was hosting a show while I was playing.
Right.
So during a home game, Grant, guess what? I was doing a show for 3 hours on Saturday, which was my actual time away from football, where I could talk all sports. And it was great because I was an actually active player.
That's so awesome.
And then on the road games, I would just do a TV. I mean, I'd just do a phone hit. But it gave me the experience. And that's why I'll tell a young guy, because everyone asks me, man, how did you get into it? Why? I just told them all this. I said, look, reps. Any kind of reps you can do, man.
No question.
If you can intern, if you can do that, man.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Absolutely.
Because that's
valuable,
man. I tell
kids that all the time.
It's so valuable.
You don't even really have to be on the air. You can practice a lot of this on your own. You really can.
Exactly.
You really can.
And why even say no? You know what I mean?
Never say no.
I've had so many guys who would say no when they were in the league, and now, like, man, I want to say yes. I'm trying to get my reel out. I'm trying to – dude, I was told you back then you got to do it now so you get comfortable in front of the camera.
Great advice.
You know what I mean? So – that's what I'm doing now.
Awesome.
I've been covering. This is my third Super Bowl I'm covering.
You know what? Good for you.
And it's very good. So I'm heading over to the last media availability.
Great.
For the New England Patriots. And
well, good.
Getting set up for Super Bowl 51, Grant.
It's great to see you, Kirk.
Great to see you, man. Great to hear you.
I'm so happy for you.
You know, I do have the NBA League Pass, so
okay.
I do catch you,
thank you
on the League Pass. So I do I like watching DeMarcus. I like watching.
He's pretty talented.
He's a talented guy. So.
Yep.
Trust me, always good to hear your voice and see you.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. That's Kirk Morrison. Radio Row in Houston, the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie on Sports 1140 KHDK. Back here on Radio Row, always love talking to Baldy, Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, and from Fox. You know, you're doing college football, you're doing everything. And here we are, Baldy, but I want to talk to you first and foremost. Where are you going after the Super Bowl? Because you always go into the mountains, the woods. You're climbing mountains. What are you doing this year, buddy?
You know, I have a neighbor of mine. I live in South Jersey. I have a neighbor that is from Italy. And he bought his childhood home in this little small village about 2 hours south of Rome in the mountains. And he's remodeled the house. And he's flipped me the keys to the house.
Wow.
So I'm going to go live in the mountains of Italy.
Wow.
For a little while. I got some friends coming through. We're going to set up shop, and we're just going to get off the treadmill for a while.
You know what? You always love to get off the treadmill for a while after a football season, and you do. I've always admired that about you. Whether it's climbing mountains or going down to Costa Rica or wherever you've been, you know what I'm saying, man? You just love to just debrief.
I was in Morocco last year, and I had a phenomenal time. Marrakesh. Casablanca.
No kidding?
It was great. It was fantastic, man.
Do you have a favorite? Because travel's my passion, and I always travel. Do you have a favorite? What's number one on your list?
I really like this one area of the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica. It's just undeveloped. There's a battle going where they're going to ever finish the roads, and if they do that, then are the chain of hotels coming in. It's just so simple and laid back. The beaches are just pure, and it's just a really fun lifestyle.
Unbelievable. Brian Baldinger joining us here on the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie on Sports 1140 KHTK. Here we are again.
Yep.
Big game coming up on Sunday. Everybody tries to break it down. I love you because you watch so much darn film, man. I mean, you spend so much time analyzing every position. Other than turnovers, give me the number one key in this game on Sunday.
I'm not going to go too crazy here, but I'm just looking at the offensive line play. You know, if New England wants to really take the air out of the ball and they want to kind of attack an undersized, fast, young defense of Atlanta, maybe they want to run LeGarrette Blount and Deion Lewis right at them. And can they sustain that and keep Matt Ryan off the field? And then vice versa, like, you know, Belichick's going to throw a defense at Atlanta that hasn't been on film. And I think they think that there's probably some weaknesses on that line of the Atlanta Falcons at certain positions, and how do they attack that so Matt Ryan can't just step up and make these phenomenal throws that he made all year.
Do we worry? I mean, not we, but when you look at youth of certain players on the defense, does that mean anything in a game? And I'm talking about Atlanta and their back end. Does that register at all?
I think it can.
Okay.
I think it can. Yeah. I think, you know, these games tend to be long, halftime, pregame, all that, pacing yourself, the moment. Can you get caught up in the moment for Keanu Neal or Deion Jones or some of these guys? I mean, they've been great players that have improved throughout the year. I'm sure. Dan Quinn has really talked him through it all with his experience in the game. But until you actually are in it, and there's Tom Brady on the other side, you don't know really how they're going to respond.
Well, they want to talk to you about a couple of things that just, you know, I use the term common sense. I'm talking about San Diego. Listen, I get it from an owner's perspective, and I know that people down in San Diego, they look at Spanos almost like a four-letter word. I get that. He's going to move. It's financially good for him. But, Baldy, how bad is this going to look for the NFL, man, with Detroit in L.A.? It's going to be a disaster.
It doesn't look good. And I think, I mean, I heard the commissioner yesterday, Grant, and they tried to get the stadium. They had the referendum. It didn't pass. They had to get a stadium built.
Yes, of course.
That franchise belongs in San Diego. It's an iconic franchise. It's got a great history. LaDainian Tomlinson, their greatest player, is going to walk into the Hall of Fame on Saturday, and deservedly so. The Lightning Bolts belong in L.A. They just do. They're going to be a tenant there in L.A. I don't know what type of fan base they're going to develop and get created.
How could they?
I don't know. I mean, they'll throw those numbers at you. The 30% of all the fans of San Diego are in L.A. right now, and so they just have to build up the – I don't know. There's sometimes you got to move. I understand that. Sometimes teams have had to change cities. This one, to me, is a head-scratcher.
You know, when John Gruden was in Oakland, I was doing their games on the TV preseason.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was the youngest coach in the league. Yep. And it didn't seem to be an issue. So I ask you, is it going to be an issue with the Rams or Sean McVay? And if what do you think is the most important thing facing him right now?
Well, I spent a lot of time – well, not a lot of time. I spent time with Sean yesterday. He's charismatic, sharp, been around the game his whole life, got a nice family lineage there that runs through the McVay family that is probably in his DNA. I think that's a good head start. You know, he's got a young quarterback that they've got to grow and develop. I think that's a big part of him being there. He's done it with Kirk Cousins. Kurt is a frontline player that can get your team to the playoffs each year, I think.
But being 31 years old, we shouldn't worry about that. I mean,
I think there's a presence about him. I think there's a – I'm not saying like – I'm not going to get all goofy here, but there's a presence about Sean McVay. There's a confidence when he speaks. There's an energy level that I think is demanded of NFL coaches these days. Whatever he lacks in experience, I think he can make up with, you know, with his IQ and with his youth.
Hey, you played in this league, so you know, first meeting, you can tell within 5 minutes about your coach, right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's just call it the way it is. So that's, I mean, so you're. I want to take you back to your playing days. Let's say you had a 31-year-old head coach, and you're like, I don't care, the guy knows what he's doing. You can tell when a guy knows what he's doing. I mean, if you buy in, you buy in, right? So take me in from a player's perspective with a coach this young.
Well, I think, you know, I think, first of all, players want to respect a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes in, it's just the player-coach relationship. Sometimes that obviously dissipates and falls apart, and things can contribute to that. I think his staff is going to be important. But I think when he stands in front of that room for the first time and there's 90 guys there on the roster, I think he's going to command the room. I believe that. I mean, just being around him last night and the charisma that he lives with, I think he'll have a good plan, and it all starts with a good plan.
Now we go to the 49ers, and they've been a mess, Baldy. They really have, and it starts with ownership. And listen, I'm on the air, and I'm not saying John Lynch can't do it because we don't know, and I don't believe in the adage, well, because you've never done something before, you're never going to be good. So I don't know. But I just do not – you know, this. You want to talk about rolling the dice, and you want to talk about a franchise that's been bad and surprised the whole football world when they made this announcement. It's going to be unbelievably interesting to see how this thing turns out, and on top of that, a 6-year deal.
For both, you know, for both Kyle Shanahan, who, you know, is rumored.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, right.
A confirmed rumor. Look, Kyle and John, I mean, they got to be joined at the hip. And that's what they want. Going back to, you know, John McVay, Bill Walsh, I mean, they need to be joined at the hip. They got to see things through the same eyes. They're both learning on the job. Obviously, Kyle's been around this game forever. John's been around. So I think they'll be men about it. But the job description of what John's job is, it never ends. I mean, it's more than just anybody can select players. How do you build a team? What do you want that team to be like? There's just so much that goes into it right now. And it's an iconic franchise that needs success. They've got to get it back to what it was and sustain it. And that is a huge challenge. And it is probably – if you had to rank the stories going into 2017, it's probably story number one right now.
We're talking with Brian Baldinger right here on the Grant Napier Show with Sports 1140. Then you got the Raiders, and it looks like this deal in Vegas is falling through and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it doesn't seem like Hogan wants to do anything for him. Now all of a sudden, you know, to me, and again, I get the fact the NFL didn't want Mark Davis in L.A., but, I mean, that would have made the most sense, except for they would have been the number one show instead of the Rams. So if you're the Raiders now, what?
London.
You're a beauty.
You're a team in London.
London, huh?
The London Raiders.
Hey,
those Raider fans will travel.
Hey, Baldy, you love traveling. Well, I'll make you the radio analyst of the Oakland Raiders.
Sign me up. I'll take the job.
But here's the deal, Baldy.
I want a nice business class seat on British Airways.
But, Baldy, here's the deal. You still got to do your college football on Saturdays.
All right. We'll bring back the Concorde. We'll bring back the Concorde. How's that?
Hey, you know what? I could see you being in, let's say, Texas A&M on a Saturday or somewhere and getting on a plane and going through either Atlanta or getting on British Airways.
I'm going to drop right out of a parachute.
I could see you doing that, Baldy.
I would like to put that on a Facebook page.
You know what, man? Because you love that schedule. I've always heard you on the radio on Saturday or TV. I'm a good buddy with Mark Folliwell, and I know you've done games with him for a while. Then I'm in my car, and I put on an NFL game. I'm like, well, Baldy's here today, man.
Yeah.
You're everywhere.
Well, I mean, I have had to have some rock star type of escapes to get out of certain arenas and stadiums, and I've had helicopter rides, land me at the stadium. I've been on the back of motorcycles to get me on the getaway car. So whatever it takes. I tell people, I get paid to travel. I work for free. That's what it comes down to.
Hey, before I let you go, you do live in the Philly area. When you look at Carson Wentz's first year, tell me what you expect from him in the next year, next 2 years, next 3 years.
More growth. I mean, the kid's got it all. He's a phenomenal talent. He is everything that you need to be the face of your franchise. Without ever being coached, he just innately knows how to lead. They just have to build around him. They just have to give him some weapons. The receivers were awful last year. They need better running back play. They need an offense line to stay healthy. The guy has got it all. He's going to be what they did to get him, it was the right move.
And the wrong move for Cleveland.
Right, and they missed. And Cleveland could have their own game plan, and maybe they find the guy this year. But he was sitting right there for him to take, and they could have really jump-started what they want to do in Cleveland with him.
And now Cleveland, they've got the potential here to really do something with all their draft picks. Baldy, I'm not into, and I hate to use the term Mickey Mouse and gimmicks, but Hugh is so gimmicky, and I like Hugh, and I've been a Hugh fan, but I saw it when he coached the Raiders. Does that work in the NFL? Can it work in the NFL, Baldy?
But, splashes of it. Splashes of some of his college, offense that he wants to run, that he ran a little bit this year that you saw in Oakland, that you saw, different stops, Cincinnati, different places he's been. He'll sprinkle that in, but it can't be the steady diet. Chip Kelly showed you that this thing, it's got to – there's a blueprint for how to win in the NFL. And so I want Hugh to be successful because he's so –
he's a great guy.
Well, he's so dogmatic about what he believes in. And anybody that feels that passionate about things, I want to see it work for him.
Final question. You just mentioned Chip Kelly. Philadelphia, he went there and won 10 games each year for the first 2 years. San Francisco, I don't think there's any coach on the planet that could have done anything in San Francisco. So I almost give him a pass. But do you think that's it as his NFL head coaching goes?
It'll be interesting to see what he does this year. Does he join a staff and contribute? I don't think he wants to go back to college. I really don't. I think he wants to stay in the NFL.
Why do you say that, Baldy?
I think this is what the end result was always for him, is to get to the NFL. I think he was smitten by it. It's the highest challenge. I could see Chip going back to becoming an offensive coordinator, showing that he's got some flexibility to what he believes in and that he could put game plans together and alter it week to week to attack weaknesses on the other team, heighten your strengths. And if he's successful the way Kyle Shanahan was successful, the way Josh McDaniels has come back and been successful, I could see him rebuilding his resume and getting an opportunity. Because he is a football coach, and he lives it. And I think he's very bright.
Well, you're going to be living it pretty soon, man, up in the beauty of Italy.
Yes.
You're going to be living it big time.
Well, I'm going to – I'm not going to advertise it, Grant.
It's just, I'm advertising it for
you. We're going to live like a prince.
When I grow up, I want to be just like you.
All right. Let me know when you get there.
See you, Baldy.
All right, Grant. Anytime.
Take care. That's Brian Baldinger. Good stuff right there. And, again, we are coming to you courtesy of Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. Grant Napier, Radio Row in Houston on Sports 1140 KHDK. Back here in Houston on Radio Row, I've watched the NFL from, well, I started going to games at the old Yankee Stadium with my dad and my brother in 1962. Mm. And so to be sitting across from Jerry Kramer is a real honor. And his Super Bowl 51 media tour is being sponsored by Blimpy. Pick up a tray of subs from Blimpy for your Super Bowl party. Got two of them right in front of me. Blimpy has been serving up terrific subs since 1954. Folks, cater this year's Super Bowl party with Blimpy subs. Jerry Kramer, my name is Grant Napier, and again, it's a privilege to be sitting in your presence. How are you today?
Thank you, Grant. Nice to be with you. I am fine, and your comment about 1962 brings back some wonderful memories for me.
That's exactly right. You know what? It's funny because that's the last year the Giants were relevant, and then in my childhood, the Giants were terrible every year. I started going to the games, and that was it. And then really all the way through my childhood, all the way through college, it was a long drought for my team that I rooted for, but not so with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, we had a hell of a run there from the 61. We played in the championship game in 60, and then the next 7 years we won 5 titles. So it was a wonderful era for us, the 60s, yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is a good friend of the show, and I've known Aaron for ever since he came out of Cal. And he talks about Green Bay, and he talks about the culture, and he talks about what it's like living up there. And I it's still on my bucket list to get to Lambeau Field. It's the one thing in my sports life that I want to do that I haven't done. Green Bay, there's nothing like it in all the sports in this country, is there?
You know, it's really hard to quantify and measure and understand. You know, I have been to 10,000 autograph sessions where the people will come up and they say, we used to go to Grandma's house every Sunday, Mom and Dad and all the kids, and Grandma would cook a big dinner, and then we'd go in the living room and watch the Packers. And you couldn't walk in front of that TV set, and you couldn't talk either. And so they started becoming Packer fans when they were barely able to walk, right? But they could watch the games. And there's just a wonderful combination of love and affection and appreciation and criticism of the team. They feel personally responsible, and there are millions of owners up there, you know, that really don't know who owns the Packers.
Right.
There was an article in the Press Gazette years ago that if it came down to a legal battle, it might be American Legion post 14. They floated the last bond issue to keep the team alive. Oh. So that might be the original owner, but the people believe they own the club, and they certainly do, you know. And
that's
it's just
amazing.
Wonderful to be there.
Jerry Kramer, Super Bowl 1 and 2 champion from the Green Bay Packers. I say Bart Starr, you say what?
Leadership, captain. Intellect, toughness, wonderful story. Bart, my first year, we didn't know who Bart was. He was a very polite, very nice, very quiet guy. And he didn't throw a pass in a game that he's a touchdown pass in a game that he started till his fourth season.
Wow.
Now, somewhere in there, we're in Chicago playing the Bears. And Bill George is a middle linebacker. Like, they always have a great middle linebacker, you know, Butkus, right. Singletary, on and on. And Bart had the reputation of being a little soft. And Bart threw a long ball down the right sideline. My defensive tackle stopped and turned around and watched the ball. I'm watching the ball. Bart's watching the ball. Bill George is not watching the ball. Bill's coming. And he hits Bart in the mouth with a forearm, ran about 5 yards to get to him,
wow.
And hit him in the mouth with a forearm and split his lip, his upper lip, up into his nose,
oh,
just right to the top of his lip. And he just immediately starts bleeding. And Bill George says, "That ought to take care of you, Star, you pudding." Didn't say pudding, but
right,
it was something
like
that, you know. And Bart says, "Blank you, Bill George, we're coming after you."
Uh-huh.
And I had never heard Bart say blank you before or since, right? But Bart got up, and the blood is just running down his jersey, just flowing. And I said, "Bart, you better get the sidelines, get sewed up. You're bleeding like a stuck hog." He said, "Shut up and get in the huddle."
Wow.
I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." So he takes us down the field 7, 8, 9, 10 plays. bleeding all the time. We score. He goes to the sidelines. We're not as delicate as the boys today are, so they put him on the bench and sewed him up right there on the field.
Wow.
Put about 9-10 stitches in his lip and patted him on the backside and said, go get him. So he never missed a play. They sewed him
unbelievable.
While the defense was on the field, and they went right back to the game and finished the game. And that is when Bart Starr became our leader. At that point.
That's right.
We
won over the team.
Bart Starr is strong enough for me. Bart Starr is tough enough for me. Bart can handle it. Don't worry about Bart anymore.
Wow. You know what? I hope you don't mind me getting off on a little tangent here. My dad played college football in 1950, and he tells me the story. They were on the road. He went to a small college in New York, Union College, and they were playing in Rochester. And he split his lip open, and they had him walk literally in his football uniform 3 blocks to get sewn up, okay? And my dad tells the story. He's in his football uniform, and the doctor is stitching up his lip, and the doctor's phone rings, and the doctor takes the call, and he was gone for like 3 or 4 minutes, and he comes back. He had left the needle in my father's mouth, okay? And then on the bus ride back to Union College, my dad's lip was completely sewn up, and everyone was trying to make him laugh on the trip home, you know, to split the stitches open. So you're right. It was a different era, wasn't it?
It was a different time. It was a different time.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. All right. So I love that story about Bart Starr. There are so many people that are walking the earth that weren't alive with Vince Lombardi was a coach. So what made Vince Lombardi arguably the greatest coach ever?
His ability to generate intensity and emotion. We played on an emotional level that was uncommon. We were involved emotionally, mentally, physically, but most of all, there was a hunger, a drive, a burn, a want, a need, a fire, something inside of us that made us a little stronger, made us a little more focused, and we had a wonderful relationship with our teammates. We loved our team and appreciated our team and would play for our team. You played not for the coach or not for the money. You played not to let the team down. So if you had a broken pair of ribs like I did, you played the next week. You played that day. You missed one play in the game, right? I played with detached retinas. I played with a broken thumb, broken ribs, 103 fever. Not for the coach and not for the money, but so I didn't let the team down.
Wow.
So that feeling of brotherhood, of family in the organization is a powerful thing.
You know, I'm looking at your accomplishments, and you see the thing, forgive me, I've been doing this a long time. It is such a thrill for me to be sitting here talking to you because you're truly one of the household names to me in the history of the National Football League. Like, if you put NFL, I think you can put a couple of names next to the NFL, but one of the names needs to be Jerry Kramer. And that era of football, I miss. Hey, listen, I understand that we're now in 2017, but I used to love watching football back in the 60s as a youth at Yankee Stadium, and you know, seeing what I thought back then were the greatest players to ever play the game. And we also had season tickets to the Jets, so I used to see Johnny Unitas coming with the Colts, and you know, I just love that era of football, and the only way we can relive it is by going back and looking at the old film. But boy, I gotta tell you, the 60s to me, Jerry, and you're a member of the all-decade 60s, that was my favorite era in the history of the National Football. Like, those are my fondest memories.
Yeah. I felt that Johnny Unitas was probably the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And I'm talking to Raymond Berry, his favorite receiver, one
absolutely.
Evening. And I'm telling Raymond, I said, I never watched anybody warm up. I got into a shell by myself. I generate anger, and my defensive tackle has raped my wife, shot my dog, killed my children, burned my house, and he's going to pay for it, right? So I don't really get into other guys, but I used to watch Johnny warm up. And Ray looked at me and said, how come? I said, well, if Johnny threw the ball out about a yard from the receiver, I'd say we had a chance today. If he threw it under your chin where he normally threw it, he was so accurate. And Raymond said, Jerry, hate to tell you this, but Johnny would throw one out every once in a while in case a D-back was on our shoulder and get it out here where the D-back couldn't get away, but couldn't get to it. So it was Johnny was a wonderful guy. And Raymond, that pair was sensational.
We're wrapping it up with Jerry Kramer. He's being sponsored Super Bowl 51, the media tour sponsored by Blimpies. You know, we always talk about life after football, and we're really talking about life after football for you. any ailments that just are with you every single day because you played football in that era?
No, I generally have felt pretty well. I've got some back problems currently that I'm working on, and I'll get fixed, and I'll work on my golf game a little while after that and maybe go fishing and do some things in the country.
Bless you.
As I love to do. And it's just been an amazing ride. I am older than I ever thought I would be, and I was assuming that I would be dribbling down my chin and down my pant leg at this particular time in life. So I am stunned to be here, and I'm happy to be here, and I feel good, and I'm enjoying the journey. And I'm having an especially good time reminiscing about my days,
yeah,
and the good old days, and hanging out with some of the guys.
And that ring on your finger is from when?
That's from Super Bowl II.
Wow.
That was our third consecutive title. And no one has done that before in New England, in case you're listening.
Hey, you know what I love about that ring? And I know we're on radio. You can wear it. The rings today, you can't wear it because they're like golf balls
on
your hand.
I know.
That's beautiful. That's no, really.
Yeah.
That's the way all rings should look, because you can wear it every day. You can't wear the rings now. They're too big.
I know. They are. They're gaudy.
Yeah, they're gaudy. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take a picture of it if you don't mind. Look at
not
that
at
ring.
All.
That's some Super Bowl II. Wow.
Correct. Three consecutive titles. That's our claim to fame.
And you know what? That's a great claim to fame.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that you beat the Giants in one of those, but that's okay. Hey, Jerry, it's an absolute privilege to have you here.
Thank you
very much. That's the great Jerry Kramer.
Great to be with you.
Great to be with you, too. And we're coming to you, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Jiffy Lube, we've got you covered. We'll be back to Radio Row here in Houston. This is Grant Napier on Sports 1140 KHTK. Back with you here on Radio Row, Grant Napier, and always fun to be at Super Bowl week. Coming to you courtesy of Jiffy Lube, we've got you covered. Pete Prisco. You know, Pete, I got to tell you, it's not the same as standing on the driving range at Lake Tahoe.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Where you and I have had many chats up there for the celebrity tournament, but it's great to
that.
See you.
That's a great spot.
Isn't that awesome,
that's
man?
That's one of my favorite places to go.
I haven't seen you the last couple
of
years.
Coming. I come once in a while, you know, depending on if somebody's there and you can do an assignment or something. So,
how many years you've been covering the Super Bowl?
This will be my 29th.
Wow.
Yeah. First one was San Francisco beating Denver.
Wow.
55. It's how long ago that was. They put up 55 in that game, and the players in the locker room were yelling, "We got the speed limit." Because remember, the speed limit used to be 55.
That's beautiful. Pete Prisco, CBS Sports. You know, that's too amazing. I've been doing the Kings for 29 years, so that brings back a lot of memories. And I was talking about this with somebody last night, as a matter of fact, that we were playing the Rockets, and I was speaking with someone from Houston. It's just amazing how fast time goes when you reflect back at, you know, all the years, and here we are in 2017, and we're doing the same thing, you know?
It's crazy, and it goes like that,
too.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is.
You've seen a lot of good and a lot of bad in Sacramento.
Oh,
right?
Boy, yeah, a lot of good lately. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, this Super Bowl game, and you know, New England seemed like they're here every year, and now Atlanta's the new kid on the block. And I talked about the championship game 2 weeks ago, how big of a game that was personally for Matt Ryan to get off any of the critics or whatever, can't win the big one, playoff record, blah, blah, blah. When I say Matt Ryan, you say what?
I say underappreciated quarterback. And I've said that for a long time. I mean, you know, people point out, you know, look, playoff failures. If you really go back and study his playoff failures, the first loss was a road game as a rookie at Arizona. I mean, he wasn't going to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Not supposed to win that game.
That's right.
But they had a bad game against the Giants that one year. That was a bad
game. In New York.
Which you know because you're a Giants fan. But there were a lot of games, like against San Francisco in the championship game, people think, oh, wow, they lost that game. He threw for 396 yards and three touchdowns in that game. And he was on the – if Harry Douglas doesn't trip, he scores a touchdown.
In the game, they would have won that game.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hard to put – you know, people criticize him for playoff failures. I think he's been an underappreciated guy. I think he's elevated his game now where he could be in the conversation to be among the best of the best in this league. He will be the MVP this year. He's on a – unbelievable pace in the postseason. You realize he's over 70% each game in the postseason, and his yards per attempt is 9 and then 10 in the two games. And he's got 7 touchdown passes, no interceptions. He's playing great football. If he wins the MVP, I think you got to put him in the conversation.
Pete, I'm curious, you know, for someone that's been doing this for such a long time, and you come here and there's thousands of people doing the same thing that we're doing, what approach do you take on Super Bowl week to do your job?
Well, it's kind of evolved. It's funny. I mean, I'm a guy that sits over here and I do radio, I mean, TV interviews now for online, digital online. So that wasn't around when I started doing it. I mean, when we first started coming to the Super Bowl, there were a couple radio stations there, and they kept them in a little ballroom, and there was nobody there.
Right.
And you went to the practice. I mean, you went to the press conference, and you actually wrote stuff there. Now what I do is, like, last week I went to the Pro Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and I did some stuff from the Pro Bowl, talking to Pro Bowl players about guys in this game. And one of the things I did was, is Matt Ryan elite? You know, you asked that question. And to a man, every one of them said yes. And I was astounded by that.
Everyone.
Every single player said yes. And I'm astounded by that because the perception by the media and the fans is that he's not. Among the players and his peers, it is.
See, I have this conversation on my show all the time because I ask people like yourself, how do you define elite for a quarterback?
For me right now, and I'm not putting him in the elite category yet, right now there are the elite of the elite to me are Brady, Rodgers, Breeze has been elite, and Ben didn't play elite this year, but he's been elite.
Yes, he has.
Those are the four guys right there.
Yes.
Those are the four guys. Now, if Ryan closes out by winning a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP with this season and he can come back next year and do the same type of numbers season, then I think he's in the conversation as well. And, you know, there are other guys that have been in the conversation, but it's hard to stay. You know, Eli Manning has two Super Bowls.
Right.
But do people consider – you know, nobody considers Eli Manning elite at all or even close to it. Do you realize he's top 10 in touchdowns, top 10 in yards, and he has two rings? And he's been Super Bowl MVP, right?
Twice.
So – think about that. Nobody considers him elite. So what is elite? It's hard to define the exact word, but
I wouldn't say nobody considers him elite, but I would say there's a big division there. There's an argument on both sides. Here's how I look at quarterbacks that are elite. I'm all about postseason, and I'm not talking about just winning Super Bowls, but I'm talking about how you perform. You know, to me, I think Donovan McNabb was one of the worst postseason quarterbacks that I've ever seen, but he was great in the regular season. I'd rather have an Eli Manning who's so many times in the regular season who plays great in the postseason. He had a very good game even in the loss at Green Bay this year. I would take a quarterback like that any day of the week.
Yeah, you want him to step up in the big
yes.
moments. But, you know, Joe Flacco stepped up in the big moments.
Yes, he did.
And it wasn't just the Super Bowl year. He was always a good postseason quarterback.
So that's the knock on Tony Romo.
Right. And which is why probably most people don't consider Romo elite.
And I don't either.
No, I don't either.
Yeah.
I think Romo's very, very good.
I do too.
But I don't think he's elite. You know, the elite is – it's hard to define the elite. Like, a lot of people think Russell Wilson is elite. I don't. I think he won Super Bowl because he had the greatest – arguably one of the greatest defenses of
right.
all time. And so – and he's played well in playoff games and done good things, but I don't think he's elite either. The four guys are elite.
Yes.
And then I think there's the group. Then you get Eli in that group and Matt Ryan.
Yeah,
in
I
that
agree
group,
with that.
And Russell Wilson. And, you know, Rivers is a guy who never gets his due because he hadn't won – but think about it. He played on a – torn up knee in the championship game and almost won that thing one year. So it's hard to define elite.
You know, and there's an argument about Kurt Warner. Is he a Hall of Fame quarterback in your opinion?
I do think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't know if he's going to get in right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a little bit, but I do think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Look, he was, what, 2 minutes away? Grand total maybe a minute and a half away from being three-time Super Bowl winner.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Patriots scored
late. With two different teams, yeah.
Right. The Patriots scored late to win it, but it would have went into overtime. But then they had the Arizona game where they drove down, the Steelers drove down. So, yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Let's talk about this matchup here and how you – what do you – you know, forget about turnovers for a minute. I'm looking at Atlanta, their explosive offense. I think their defense is better than people give them credit for. You look at New England, they didn't miss a beat when they lost Gronkowski, which is amazing to me. How do you see this matchup?
I think it all comes down to the defense of New England against that offensive, and how are they going to play him? I mean, how does Belichick play that offense? And by that I mean, and I went back and actually watched this again because, I mean, I grew up a Giants fan, so I remember the game. I was at the game when they played the K-Gun offense, and Belichick was the defensive coordinator. I went back and I watched it again to see what he did. I kind of remember what he did, but I wanted to see for myself. He played two down linemen that whole game, played four linebackers, five defensive backs, dropped into coverage. Every time they came across the middle, they blasted them. And – you know, truth be known, the Bills had over 400 yards in that game.
Yes, they did.
Reed dropped a bunch of balls, the easy passes.
Yep.
And so they didn't stop them exactly. They controlled the clock, the Giants, in the second half by running the football and didn't allow them on the field. Can he do that? Can he run the ball? Can he keep that up? See, and then you get in danger zone. If you run the ball and you get a field goal and they come back and get three plays to a touchdown and it's 7-3, you come back and run the ball, get a field goal again, they go get another one, you're down 14-6, and you look up going, oh, no, here we go. So you got to be careful with that. I'm curious to see how he plays. Does he take away Julio? You know, that's what he wants to do. He wants to take away the number one thing
sure.
you do. Well, that's Julio Jones. But can you take away Julio Jones? Do you double him? And if you double him, who do you double him with?
They did it with Brown last week.
They did. But that was easier to do when Bell went out of the game, and they don't have the weapons.
That's a great point. That's a very good point.
They don't have the weapons that Atlanta has. Atlanta's backs are dangerous
yep.
pass receivers. And not just swing passes and screen passes. They get them down the field.
Yes, they go vertical.
And
yep.
so I think that's going to be a problem for the Patriots, I think.
So with that said, you think Atlanta's got a very good chance of winning this game?
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I don't think either defense is going to stop anybody. You know, a couple things about the Patriot defense. Number one scoring defense in the league, right? They played four teams in the bottom 10 in scoring.
That's right.
They played two teams in the top 10 in scoring, and one of them was the Steelers without Roethlisberger.
Yeah, they didn't play a lot of teams with elite quarterbacks.
No.
Yeah.
And so the other side, the Falcons' numbers aren't great, but they grew up as the season went along. They got four rookies and two second-year stars on that, Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley, their second-year players. Those guys grew up. The mistakes that they made early in the season, they stopped making. And
That's a great point.
I am concerned about the young defenders and the Brady's, because even at the Pro Bowl, the guys were saying, he is so good with his eyes at getting you to move here, and he comes back there. And those young defenders, they're aggressive. They can get caught in that situation.
See, I think that's the biggest key of this game. You talk about young. There's a lot of youth on that Atlanta defense stage, blah, blah, blah. See, that to me, if I'm looking at this from Atlanta's perspective, that's the one, you know, intangible or the one little thing I don't know. That would concern me a little
nowadays,
bit.
Nowadays, these guys just go play. You know, it's like playing in the, you know, they just keep playing.
Right.
So I don't know if they're going to get caught up in the moment. Uh-huh. I just, for me, it's more of the mental side. Can they, you know, they compensate with their mistakes with their speed? If they make them, will they be able to compensate for them? That's for me the biggest concern.
Best Super Bowl you've covered in 29 years? Do you have one that stands out? Now you're a Giants fan, I know what you're going to say.
My mother had just passed away a year before that and was a diehard Giants fan. And that was the one in Tampa, you know, against
sure, Buffalo. Of course.
It was after 9/11 when Houston sang the national anthem. And to me, that was special. She would have loved it, and she wasn't there, so that was the one.
Yeah. Before we let you go, when we talk about this sport and the criticism that we have heard about off the field, whether it's the Deflategate or whether, you know, it's domestic violence or what have you, with where the league is, if I asked you, how's the health of the NFL right now? We saw some declining ratings this year, but if I said, how's the state of the game? And I asked you, Pete, give me the state of the game. How would you grade it? How would you say it is?
I think it's a B, and it needs to get better in a lot of areas. I mean, domestic violence, if a guy commits a domestic violence crime, he should be gone.
I agree.
Period. Get him out of here.
Right.
Get him the heck out of here. But then, you know, then they have some, you know, the marijuana issue. These guys, their bodies are beat up to death. Let them, they want to make it legal for them to let them smoke the pot if it's legal in the state. Don't test them for it. So I think Roger Goodell's done a significantly better job than people give him credit for. I'll say that, and I'll say it, continually say that. Because, look, it's a great business, yes, and there are a lot of things that go wrong with it. The concussion issue was a disaster. These guys, if they knew stuff, there's still no proof that they did, but, you know, they're doing a better job of it. All you can do now is get better at the mistakes you made before, and I think
that's a good point.
Yeah, the ratings went down. You know, the president,
the election, everything. I agree with you. And there were a lot of bad games early, too. Hey, I got to roll, but
okay.
Pete.
Absolutely. Thanks, Grant.
It's a pleasure seeing you.
Anytime.
All right, Pete Prisco joining us here. Well, I can't believe we are at the finish line as I am on my way to the airport to get ready for tomorrow's game against the Phoenix Suns. I want to thank Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered for making it possible to broadcast live here at Radio Row. So much fun to be here and so many phenomenal interviews that we had. Great catching up with my good childhood friend, Christopher Mad Dog Russo. Great to be able to talk to the legendary Jerry Kramer and other people I respect so much in the business, such as Jim Gray and so many others that stopped by in the last 2 days here from Radio Row. Tomorrow I'll be back at 3. Doug Christie will be rejoining me as we come to you from Golden One Center, getting ready for the Kings and the Phoenix Suns. My thanks to Jay Johnson, my producer, for lining up all of these phenomenal guests. He did a phenomenal job. My engineer, Jason, who is the best in the business, in my opinion, taking care of all of our needs. Chris Verlade and the crew back at the station, thank you very much for all of your hard work. I'm back tomorrow at 3, saying so long from Houston, Texas. The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie, Sports 1140 KHTK.